rename yourself if you could. The meeting is being recorded for public record. Chat is not part of the public record, so if you want it to be in our minutes, please raise your hand to be recognized, and then our voting options when we get to that. I'll give it another minute or so. I'm going to stop, then I'll stop sharing my screen and we'll get going. Look at that. I can't see everyone now. Can't see everyone when I have my screen all up.
I'm seeing the AI companion going. Is that?
I did turn it on, and I don't know how to turn it off, but we can turn it off if need be. I figured I'd try it.
Okay.
We can discuss later during open discussion.
It's going to be on, though, in the meantime.
It is on, yes.
Okay.
All right. I am going to go ahead and call this meeting to order on Wednesday, November 19th, at 12:02 p.m. If we could please get roll call, Yvonne. Also, just a side note, Yvonne, Michelle Stefanski Seymour or Seymour Stefanski is here, but her mic does not work.
Thank you for the heads up, Wendy. Appreciate that. All righty. Hi, everyone. If you once you hear your name, if you can please acknowledge that you're here, that would be greatly appreciated. Let's get started. Mel Banta.
Oh, present.
Victoria Bell. Marcy Benda,
Present.
Jennifer Best, Ricky Boche,
Here.
Michael Boggs,
Present.
Gladys Brangman, Sean Chang,
Present.
Carl Cornell,
Present.
Erica Crawley,
I'm here.
Bethany Dixon,
Present.
Jamie Doss,
Present.
Alicia Erickson,
Present.
Kevin Fitch, Danielle Hill,
Present.
Rose Howard,
Present.
Kyle Carnuta, Ellie Krumpowers,
I'm here.
Jeremy Kruser,
Present.
Sophie Lanchis, Yelverton Lucane, David McDermott,
I am here.
PM Enders,
Here.
Ann Morris,
Present.
Stephanie Rasup, Matthew Snyder,
Present.
Kate Supron, and I know that Michelle Stefanski Seymour is here. Mic's not working. Deb Serene.
Here.
Wendy Treat.
Present.
Danielle Wierson.
Present.
Nikki Williams.
Present.
Awesome. That is everybody. Thank you.
Thanks, Yvonne. For the land acknowledgement, Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayakono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gayakono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University in New York State and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of the Gayakono disposition and honor the ongoing connection of Gayakono people past and present to these lands and waters. Next item on our agenda is the approval of the November 5th, 2025 meeting minutes and the approval of the October 23rd special meeting minutes. I will give everyone a second to review. Yes, Rose.
I have two friendly amendments to suggest, actually three. In section five, effectiveness, effectiveness has two S's. And in section five, C and section six, Yvonne's name has a Y instead of an I.
Thanks for bringing those up, Rose. I was actually going to bring up the Yvonne part. I didn't realize the effectiveness part. I wasn't really looking at that. So if there are no other comments or friendly amendments, I would welcome a motion to approve both sets of meetings by unanimous consent.
With amendments.
With amendments, yes, with the friendly amendments. Yes, Danielle.
I just wanted to say that the amendment is that it says that I was absent for our last meeting and I was here.
Oh, okay. All right. With the friendly amendments that Rose mentioned and Danielle indicating that she was present at the November 5th meeting and not absent, I now welcome a motion to approve by unanimous consent with friendly amendments and the reflection that Danielle was in attendance.
Motion to approve by unanimous consent with the reflection that Danielle was in attendance.
Any seconds?
With friendly amendments and seconded.
Thank you. Any dissent? Seeing no dissent, our minutes from the November 5th meeting and our special meeting on October 23rd have been passed. Next item on the agenda is a call for late additions to the agenda. I actually have one that I would like to add regarding the feature of the American University Town Hall. I propose to add it to business of the day item D, which would be after the special meeting request. So I would welcome a motion to approve that change to our agenda.
Motion to approve.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any dissent?
By unanimous
yeah,
consent, right?
By yes. We need to remember to do that. Yes. Motion to approve by unanimous consent, Jeremy.
By unanimous consent, yes.
Seconded by who?
Deb. By unanimous consent.
Thank you, Deb. All right. We'll add that to our business of the day. Any other late additions to the agenda? Seeing none, we'll close that item and we will start our business of the day. We are happy to welcome Stephen Burke, who is the CME, which is the Cornell Experience Modernization Initiative. I believe I got that acronym correct. He's the program director for it and he's going to give us a brief presentation. Stephen, the floor is yours. I've already said it so that if you need to share any slide deck, you should be able to share your screen.
Well, thanks, Wendy. Hi, I'm joined here with Trish Davis. Trish, you're here somewhere? Yep, there she
I'm
is.
Here, yes. Hello.
Okay, so we're going to do an overview of CME, the Cornell Experience Modernization Initiative. You got that exactly right. And we'll answer any of your questions as we go through it. And so Trish is going to share. So I think you're going to start off with, were you planning on playing that first, or are you just going to present it?
Yeah, I'll kick us off here. So thank you so much for having us.
to this meeting. We want to thank you all for connecting with CME. And at the end of our presentation today, we'll have a variety of communication channels where you can connect with the program and ask more questions or even share the connections. If I'm having any audio problems, please just let me know. My headphones, of course, at the most inopportune time are dying. So with that being said, I'll kick us off and I'm going to alternate earbuds here so we can get through this and charge them. So if you haven't had a chance to watch President Kolakoff's message about CME, this was posted a few months ago, not that long ago actually, and it is on the cme.cornell.edu website. It is about 5 minutes in length. I know we have a specific amount of time today, so I will not play it in its entirety. But I do want to say that it does answer a lot of questions about the CME program and the president's vision for CME. So with that is an offering to you, and we'll share these links and information with all of you after today. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Stephen to talk a little bit about the program.
Thanks, Trish. So my name is Stephen Burke. I'm the Director of Enterprise Services on the Ithaca campus in Central IT. And so for the CME program, the Cornell Experience Modernization Initiative, I am the program director. And so I don't know what you all know. Some may have a little more understanding about CME, some may less. So I'm just gonna start off setting some context. So if this is redundant for you, I apologize in advance. So I'm gonna talk a little bit about why now. So what was really the purpose of CME? And we started off with this concept of the four Ds, data, debt, duplication, and distribution. And really what they mean is in terms of debt, like we have an unusually large number of very old systems. We have an unusually large number of very old systems that need to be updated. And those are typically called technical debt, right? And I bet everyone in this room has some technical debt where we've created this application to fill a gap and it's just persisted over time. We have hundreds of these applications. You know, we did an assessment early in 2024. We counted 800 plus administrative systems that are sitting outside of our large ERPs, which our ERP stands for Enterprise Resource Planning. Those are typically things like PeopleSoft for our student, or Qali for our finance, or SAP Finance on the Weill campus for finance. So we had hundreds of applications we found outside of those systems that are doing a variety of things, and we're in the midst of trying to rationalize them now. And those systems, when they were built, they largely don't talk to each other. They're built in silos. And as a result, they lead to, you know, data gaps, right? You don't have connection between these systems. There's data accuracy concerns because the data may be changed or manipulated within these systems. And so when you look at that kind of that scenario where we have multiple apps, we have largely distributed and non-connected systems, we do create a problem with the data. We're highly distributed, as we know, because we have multiple systems. We have multiple IT units across the campuses, both in the Ithaca and Weill campuses. And so what we've ended up with is just a really large set of duplication of systems that are poorly connected. They're not well aligned. And so from a process perspective, I'm sure you all have had to develop your own internal processes where you have to connect multiple systems together, where you have to gather data from multiple different places. And in part, it's because of these things I just described, those four Ds. And so the promise of CME and what CME is gonna do is, if we're successful, it's gonna make work easier for everybody. So what we wanna do is streamline and align all these diverse systems and data sets into one or less fewer systems. And as a result, we'll reduce all that repetitive work, we'll enable faculty, staff, students, and researchers to collaborate and work better together. We'll provide more reliable data because we're not modifying data in multiple places. So ultimately, our goal would be to have one common, you know, if you want to just call it a database, one common data place for storage of human resources, finance, budget, and to some degree, research for post-awards. Having one common place for that data to reside. And as a result, we're going to be able to work together as one Cornell versus having multiple different campuses totally disconnected And one of the goals will be that we, I had heard someone describe researchers have, they find it easier to collaborate with researchers outside of Cornell than researchers inside of Cornell because it's so difficult to connect. It's very hard for students to explore opportunities between campuses because our systems are largely disconnected. And so our goal really is to resolve that problem and create this enhanced experience across the community with some modern intuitive interface, which makes it a lot easier to find and do what you need. And that's the goal. That's what we achieved. That's what we hope to achieve through the Cornell Experience Modernization Initiative. So how are we going to get there? We spent quite a bit of time over the past year and a half, almost going on 2 years now, getting ready to do where we are today. And so starting just to give you kind of like a bit of a history on CME itself. We started a readiness assessment last year, early 2024, and we identified areas where we're not ready to deploy a new ERP system. So trying to solve those things I described above, we went through, we engaged Huron to help us conduct a readiness assessment. And so during that readiness assessment, we developed a program structure. We developed multiple interviews. We had multiple interviews. We did surveys. We gathered data, or what we call data artifacts, to really describe kind of our current ecosystem. And from that, Huron defined those areas in which we need to focus on to prepare ourselves for creating this common ERP solution that we're going to talk about today. From there, we went through and we conducted a RFP selection through Gartner. We engaged Gartner to help us select an ERP software vendor and system integrator. That selection was made. We selected Workday early in early September, or late September rather, and we selected Huron just recently in the end of November. We completed the contract negotiations with Huron as our system integrator. And we just completed our first ERP implementation project kickoff meeting at Statler this past week. And so what we're planning on doing is we've moved from what we call the readiness phase into now what we call the pre-implementation phase. And so with Huron's assistance, we're starting to prepare ourselves for the implementation of a common human capital management, so HCM, finance and donor engagement solution, followed by budget and then student. So in parallel, we also have some other initiatives we'll talk about. And so that's where we're, that's the phased implementation that we've been working on over the past 2 years. You go down to the next slide. And so I'm not going to read every one of these quotes, and you'll get this deck, I assume, afterwards. So these are some quotes that we received during our readiness assessment. And these are the voices of Cornell. These are people telling us kind of how they see their interaction with the systems that we have available to them. So these align perfectly with what I described in terms of the 4Ds. So we have system and data fragmentation. So for instance, one person told us, no systems speak to each other. And that's exactly what I said in terms of that distribution, highly distributed data that's not connected and siloed. So we had that system and data fragmentation that's clearly articulated by the people that we interviewed. We have a lot of manual processes and workarounds. One person told us about a half the resource time spent on repeating is reporting is focused on cleaning data. And that's back to that data integrity problem we have because data is highly distributed and it's duplicated and oftentimes modified. You don't necessarily trust the data. I'm sure everybody in this room has had to pull data from multiple sources into Excel. And then you're unable to replicate the results that you've gotten because the data itself is inconsistent. Legacy system issues. So one person told us legacy systems are prevalent and present, a significant risk to the university. I know personally of applications that were written by someone who has long retired from Cornell that are still in use, that we actually hire that person back periodically to fix the problem, fix things that go on with it. So we have a lot of this technical debt. I talked about debt as part of one of the 4Ds. We have a lot of technical debt that that create these legacy systems that are running the university, really key applications for many business processes. And the last is data quality. So one person told us people spend way too much time cleaning data. Well, it's kind of relative to what the previous comment was, but it really is about the data quality, and that data quality is the integrity of the data is concerned because of the replication and duplication and modification of data throughout the environment. And so these were the voices that we heard. And so everything that we've done, we've tailored around that. And so what is the promise of CME? Well, the promise of CME is that we want to make everything easier for everyone. That's the experience part of CME. So we definitely heard in discovery groups and focus groups that it's really hard to work at Cornell. And because of those four Ds I described earlier, we've heard that data is hard to find. It's not always consistent. And we also know that staff want to grow and become more connected. CME is helping with that. And so that ability for people to explore across campuses. I know a student who wants to attend a class at Weill is very difficult when they're a student within the Ithaca campus. And so we want to start breaking down those barriers, or have researchers be able to collaborate with their corresponding partner in Weill. It's very difficult because we don't have mechanisms to connect them. And so that's the promise of CME. That's what we want to do. We want to empower the entire Cornell community. At the same time, update and create a very safe work environment within a new modern technology landscape. So CME is, if you think about CME, and I want to try to describe what CME is more than just one thing. CME is an umbrella. CME is a program. So within that umbrella, we have multiple different projects. And so one project, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that project, which is the ERP project. And that's moving to a common ERP platform for the university. Right now, we have multiple finance systems. For instance, we have Qualy on the Ithaca campus and SAP and Weill. We have two HR systems. We have SuccessFactors, which is an SAP system and Weill, and we have Workday on the Ithaca campus. We have two student information systems. We have PeopleSoft, and we have PeopleSoft Campus Solutions, and we have a product called Genzibar on the Weill campus. And lastly, we have multiple advancement solutions. We have Contributor Relations, which is a PeopleSoft solution, and we have Blackboard Razor Edge and Blackboard used on Weill and Lab Before Ontology. So as you can see, we have lots of different large systems that we need to bring together as one. And so that is one aspect of CME. We also have other projects within CME, and I'll talk about the timeline for these and kind of. And so one other project within the CME umbrella is called Data and Analytics. And Data and Analytics is about creating a new data ecosystem using standard tools that can be leveraged across the communities. Right now, we have multiple different ways of storing data. We have multiple different ways of reporting and running analytics. We have pretty poor data governance. I think everybody here probably understands, like, we have multiple definitions for student, for example. It's never the same. So we don't really have mechanisms in place to allow us to easily report on data because we don't have any data governance per se. We don't have really a common view of a person like me, for example. I may be a different person in multiple different systems. So we don't have this concept of Stephen Burke as one person. Stephen Burke may be replicated in PeopleSoft, and I may be in Workday, and I may be in some other location. And never do these two come together as one. And so we have to, within the CME program, we're looking at how do we combine those things. And so that's the CME program. So in 2025, we've done a lot of activities, a lot of work around getting prepared for the new ERP. One of the things we spent a lot of time on is coming up with a common chart of accounts. So when you combine systems across campus, one of the things you have to do is you have to have one chart of accounts. Right now we have multiple, and so we're working through with the assistance of Huron to create a new common chart of accounts. The HR teams have been working on looking at job architectures and coming up with common job architectures across campuses. And we've been looking at other opportunities to align business processes and policies across campus. For example, total rewards is another one that HR has been looking at. And so we're starting to look at how do we combine and work together as a one university versus as separate siloed entities. We've also done a lot of work on donor engagement experience platform project. So we call that DEEP. So DEEP is about replacing our current contributor relations module in Alumni Affairs. Alumni Affairs has been using. We are the very last customer of Oracle's running contributor relations, I believe, in the world. It's very old. It's not a modern CRM. And so that project is kind of in a what we call the silent phase. So we've gone through an RFP process. We're in contract negotiations, and we're fairly close to picking a new donor engagement program that will be used both for the Ithaca Campus Alumni Affairs, as well as the Lab of Ornithology, and for the Weill External, as well as Weill. I think that'll happen sometime in early December and kicking off sometime in January. We're also doing work around student. We have a student track where we're analyzing student life cycles and journeys. We have a student journey mapping exercise. We have a data track I talked about earlier within that CME umbrella of projects. We have a data analytics project, and they've done some work around selecting a new core data system that will allow them to have data governance, the thing they call master data management, which is really a mechanism to create that idea of a golden record where I'm one person to the university and not multiple people. And then we've done a lot of work and are working on some what we call the technical track. So there's things that we have to do outside of coming up with a common ERP that allows us to work together as one in a common ERP. Things like identity, like we have a CWID and a NetID. Those two don't talk to each other, right? If you ever try to log in or access a Weill-based application, you can't unless you're issued a new ID. And so we have to have mechanisms to allow us to work seamlessly together. And so that work's underway. Talked about the gap apps, what we call, that technical debt, the hundreds of gap apps that are out there. We're in the midst of doing that rationalization. And so that is in process. HR has done some work around job architecture I've mentioned earlier. And then research administration also has been doing work around post-award and starting to think about how do we align some of our processes across campus. And so that's some of the activities that we've done over the past year. On the next
Stephen,
slide.
I want to jump in really quick. Stephen, you've got about 2 more minutes for your presentation, and then we need to move to Q&A so we can keep, because we only have an hour and 45 or hour 15 minutes for our meeting. So in order to keep our agenda moving, I'll give
Okay,
you a
I'm
couple
gonna go.
minutes and then
All right.
Q&A.
Okay,
Thanks.
I'll go real fast then. So this is a timeline, and I'm not going to go into it too deep. Essentially, the program has already started. We've worked on readiness over the past year. We're in pre-implementation for finance, HR, and budget. The goal is that finance and HR will convert in July of 2028, and budget will convert shortly after that. We talked a little about the donor engagement project that's in flight as well. They're very much in line with the ERP project, with a go live sometime in 2028, with Weill and Lab of O following after Ithaca in 2029. We're doing a bunch of work around legacy systems and optimization. We'll provide this chart to you. If you have any questions, you can ask us about it. Going down to the next slide. So we picked Workday and HR and Huron. We picked Workday for a lot of reasons. We signed that agreement in late September. We signed the agreement with Huron in November, early November. And if you want to skip down to really why did we pick Workday? Workday is the most established cloud ERP solution in higher education. There's over 460 institutions using HCM, finance, and budget. It's got a unified in-memory data model, a multi-tenant architecture, allowing us to bring, those three big things, HCM, finance, and student together, allows us to work off one platform, one data structure, where we can do the majority of our reporting right inside Workday. It has a really strong footprint in healthcare, which was important to us because we have a physicians organization, and they are committed to improving and enhancing student grants and all the AI capabilities that are available to us. We spoke with a lot of institutions of our of similar complexity and size. Johns Hopkins is a good example. Very much like us, they're about a year ahead of us. They've given us a lot of good advice, also converting to Workday. And we felt that Workday was the best choice for us to achieve our common guiding principle of as common as possible, as different as necessary. Okay, and then Trish, you want to just talk about staying connected to CME?
Absolutely. So we've set up a variety of communication plans, and here's just a quick way, five key ways to stay connected. So with CME, there will come change for many of us as it relates to new technology, processes, et cetera. So there is at no cost change management training offered. I highly recommend this. If you can do that, it is being funded across the university. So please take advantage of that, learn some new skills there. We have CME webinars every quarter. We just had our last one on November 12th. It will be posted to the website. So you, and I thank you, Allison, for dropping that just a minute ago. So those past recordings are on there. I'm not sure if the November one is yet, but it will be shortly. Please talk about CME with others. If you have questions, contact us. We do work to respond to all of them. Sometimes it takes us a little bit of time, but we are actively working on all answers to questions. So we do say drop these communication channels to other people. We have newsletters going out, quarterly reports, as well as a contact hub set up. So those are all here linked. And I know, Wendy, we're at time, so I will stop sharing so that we can take some questions.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate the
Thank
presentation, Trish and Stephen. As you'll see in the chat, and it was going to be my very first question, will this can you share this slide deck with us? Typically, when we have guest speakers, they share their slide deck and it becomes part of the meeting packet. So if you can send that to me, and I'll make sure that the Office of the Assemblies gets it so that the rest of the employee assembly has access to it, that would be
I will
great.
take that as a takeaway, and I would just say most up-to-date information is updated after this time on the website, but I will absolutely do that as a takeaway and get that over to you, Wendy.
Yeah, I mean, even if you just send what you just presented, then
Of
that's fine
course.
because that very last slide has, go to the website and all that kind of stuff. I
Absolutely.
think that'll be fine. So,
You got it.
I see a couple of hands up for questions. I believe Danielle was first, and then Bethany.
Hi, so my question, we're using Workday for, or moving into Workday for HR, budget, and finance. I get that part, but when we're talking about student services and everything else, are we also moving all of that into Workday?
Yeah, we are. So student across all the ERP vendors isn't ready for an institution of our size and complexity. So student is further down the path. Student will be starting in 2029. It gives us a lot of time to work with Workday to enhance their current student solution. They've committed to us to work with us on enhancing it. And so our registrar has been involved closely with them and has attended some events with them to really start helping guide what needs to be changed. So yes, it does include students. Student is part of what we purchase, but we won't be implementing it till starting 2029 with a goal of finishing by 2032.
Okay, so everything we're doing in PeopleSoft now, that will all be happening in Workday. And if we're working, you've been talking to Rhonda, so I'm assuming then that all of the new systems that we just put in place that work with PeopleSoft will also work with Workday? Or are we going to have to change all of those too?
If you're referring to like curriculum lifecycle management, degree audit,
Yes.
course evaluation, yeah, the intent is that they would work with Workday.
Okay.
So they would not be replaced.
Okay, thank you.
I can't tell
Bethany?
who's first. Yeah.
Thank you so
I'll
much for Oh, sorry,
No,
Wendy.
go ahead. No, go ahead. You're good.
Okay. So I work in the Arts and Sciences College in academic HR, Stephen, and as I'm sure you found out, I think one of the interesting things about the debt, as you call it, is that there was a point when Cornell was not siloed, I wasn't here at that time. And then it was siloed. So I think a lot of the debt, I mean, debt happens because people need resources, so they create the more they take them out, right? So I think something that's been interesting to discover is that currently there really isn't a lot of centrally agreed upon guidance for the nuances that each college has sort of had to encounter and reckon with and create their own systems for. I think we're really lucky we have people who can create individual systems. So I guess I'm curious if you could speak a little to how that data collection of why does this particular system exist? What can we preserve from it when it's moved centrally? And in the interim between now and 2028 for HR, what do you advise? Because we'll still need the systems that won't be centrally available yet.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks for the question, Bethany. So we're doing a what we call a gap app rationalization project. And so we, during the assessment, we gathered 800 plus applications, and that was given to us by a broad scope of people throughout the colleges and units. And so we collected that data, and now we're starting to assess it. And so there's really not 800 applications. So sometimes people put Excel on there and Tableau, and those really aren't gap apps. And so what we need to do is rationalize the list first, and that's what we're doing. So we're going through and understanding kind of what is this application used for? Why was it created? What's the business process behind it? How was it created? Is it vended? Is it custom? What does it cost? Right? Cost is important. And then our goal really would be once we've rationalized the list and we have a really good list, then we can start looking at commonality, because more than likely there's an application across multiple different colleges and units that's doing really the same thing. And we're going to want to find that commonality. And we're also going to want to look to see, well, can this thing be done inside Workday? Does it really have to sit outside Workday? And if it does have to persist because it's a unique application that's specific to your unit, is it in the right, I don't know, for the better, like right code, or is it sustainable? Is it supportable? Does it need to be upgraded? So we need to go through and rationalize and then really understand kind of the how and what we are going to do with these applications, and then make some decisions. There's some applications for sure that are going to persist because they are very unique, so that, you know, common as possible, as different as necessary. As necessary means we understand that we can't, there are needs for academic units to have unique applications, right? But where we can make it common, that's what we're going to do. So that's going to, that work has started and it's going to go on for the next year. And so we'll be working with each of the different units as we work through this.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Kate, and then Allison, and then I have a question as well, unless it gets addressed between me or between Kate and Allison. Thanks.
So, hold on. Sorry, for some reason logged in on two different devices, so I was getting an echo. I know that you probably don't want people asking, like, is this one of the apps that will work? But we've been working in university relations to sync and develop a customer relationship management database. And I just am curious if the ones we're working with are the ones that will integrate with or already do with Workday, Marketing Cloud, and Salesforce. Are those are here to stay? Because that's what AA&D is using, as I understand it, currently. So I just wanted to make sure that we weren't like falling in a gap where we were struggling to set up. So those are ongoing. Thank you.
No, so the good news is that Salesforce is kind of integral to the overall ERP project. So our goal is to leverage Salesforce to provide better experiences for areas that perhaps Workday doesn't. Marketing Cloud is an integral part of that. Marketing Cloud is going to get integrated. We're currently using it now, and we're currently deploying it further across the campus, and that's going to continue. And it's also going to be integrated into the new donor engagement platform solution. So the product that's going to replace Contributor Relations, as well as Blackbaud and Razor's Edge, is a Salesforce-based solution. So it's not going anywhere. So.
And Allison, and then myself, and then I'm going to close question and answer. So
you can
stick with our
you
agenda.
Can go first if you want, Wendy.
No, go ahead.
I'd be asking something. Okay,
no.
Cool.
Allison, go ahead. It's fine.
All right.
Hey, Stephen.
Hello.
I think in the spring or summer, you had said in a in one of our town halls that you expected the systems integrator to be the most expensive part of this the project. And then in the September Ask Ben Anything, Ben said that he expected that the systems integrator would cost tens of millions of dollars. Now that we have a contract signed, can you share with us what that contract is for, how much money it's for, what did it end up being, what's it going to cost for the systems integrator specifically?
Yeah. Well, Allison, I can't speak to the total dollars within those contracts. I can say that we spent a lot of time working with the system integrators and really looking at this investment strategically. Regarding the costs, we evaluated very carefully to ensure that we align with the priorities and long-term value. The consultant that we've engaged, Sharon, has really that expertise to accelerate our progress. For an initiative of this size and magnitude, you have to partner with somebody. And so Huron really is one of the best in the environment. They have a lot of healthcare care experience. They've worked in solutions like Johns Hopkins, for example, used Huron. And so at a university of our size and complexity, you have to have someone like Huron to help us, where we span multiple campuses. We have really diverse academic programs. We have research. We have physicians organizations. We have medical college. So we did conduct a really arduous selection and RFP process. And I can say that our suggestion and our recommended solution was and has achieved Board of Trustee approval. And so I can't speak to the exact dollars within the contract, but I can say we did really a long and arduous process to pick and select the vendor partner to help us.
Why can't you tell us the dollar amount?
I'm not prepared to speak to the budget, Jocelyn, today.
Okay. How can we get that? I mean, it's
No,
okay. Thanks, Wendy. Go ahead.
we're good. Yeah, if he can't speak to it, he can't speak to it, and we're not going to pressure it anymore. My question actually it was not addressed between Kate and Allison, so I'm going to bring it up as well. There's been some sort of indication, or it's been alluded to, that there will be job growth with this coming on board, and we were just kind of wondering, like, do you have any numbers or dates? Because we have very highly skilled staff that are being laid off, not due to job performance or anything, but just due to budget cuts and that. And so finding homes for them internally or in-house would be spectacular. So I'm just wondering if there's any information or details you might be able to share about that.
Yeah, Wendy, I think there definitely is opportunity, especially for people who are impacted by workforce realignment or alignment or reductions that occur. So we're going through this process called backfill. And so as we move people into the program, their roles are going to have to, some, not all, but some roles are going to have to get backfilled because their positions, their functions still have to persist, right? And so where that opportunity exists, I think that is definitely something that we need to make sure we're connected to HR. I have already seen a list of people who are already impacted. And as we move forward, we haven't started doing backfill yet, and that's something that will probably start in early 2026. So the ERP project is really where you're going to see most of the backfill opportunities. These are term positions, though, so not permanent. And so they could be of any length of time. They could be short term, or they could be a longer term position. If they're going to happen kind of in a phased way, with HCM finance starting first, followed by budget, our backfill needs are kind of going to ebb and flow and go up and down. So I guess long story short is yes, there's opportunities there for backfill. There's opportunities to fill term positions depending on their skill set. They won't be permanent positions, but they could be anywhere from, a year, 2 years, in some cases maybe longer, but for the most part they'll be somewhere in that range. And so we have to stay connected. I think that's a great idea, Wendy. We have to stay connected to HR and look for those people as an opportunity.
Awesome, thank you. And with that, so we can,
did
you know,
notice
be
there were two
respectful.
questions in the chat. Do you want us to address those, Wendy? I didn't want to leave them
No,
hanging.
actually, we
Okay,
don't.
that's okay.
We
Okay.
do need to keep on our line. So I'm going to ask Danielle and Ellie both if they have further questions, just to email with the, you know, the integration with Smartsheet and the RASS for Research Administration. So with that, thank you again for joining us, Trish and Stephen. Appreciate it. Again, if you could send us the slide deck so we could put it with our meeting packet, that would be helpful. And we are going to move to our next item on business of the day. Yvonne, I'll
Thank
bounce
you.
it over to you. Thank you.
Hi.
Hi, everyone. So the next thing on our agenda is the EA Priorities Poll Ad Hoc Committee Charge. If you haven't had the opportunity to do so, please click on that link, and it is only going to be available right now for employee assembly representatives to access. And so we wanted to really start to get this committee together and move on to the next step. And if anyone has any questions about the charge or the proposed timeline, please let us know.
Also, if anyone is interested in being on the ad hoc committee, whether you are a EA member or not an EA member, even if it's someone on a committee, that's not a voting EA member, we definitely would like some input on this. Yes, Carl.
And you asked committees to submit some nominations. Are you going to talk about those nominations with the committees as well?
Yvonne, I defer to you.
Sorry, can you rephrase the question, Carl?
In the last meeting, you asked committee members or committees to reach out to their members to elicit nominations for people who could be on this committee. Did anyone get back to you?
I only heard from one person, so no. So I guess I would ask again, right, if there's anyone. I guess I'm asking out of everyone here, right? Like our goal really in the sense of asking the committees was to have the perspective not only of that specific individual, but also from that committee and have some sort of a liaison from that committee, right? So that when we are developing those questions, we're thinking about what are the people in the benefits and policy focusing on? What do they want to know about, right? What are the people in the welfare committee focusing on, so on and so forth. So that was the purpose of that. However, if we do not receive nominations from those committees or people are not self-nominating, then we need to build the committee in a different capacity, right? Yes, Carl.
I am hesitant to nominate myself without an understanding if there are going to be more committee members, but I would be open to being a chair or a co-chair for this committee.
Thank you, Carl. Really appreciate that. I think you could be an awesome leader in that area for sure. Do I need to sorry, I'm forgetting. Do I need to motion for this subcommittee or charge to be approved?
Don't believe so. I can look really quick. According to our bylaws, it just says
I have it.
The assembly may establish a standing or ad hoc committee as appropriate by a majority vote of the seated voting members of the assembly. So, EA members only, all those in favor, please use your green check mark.
In favor of.
Wait, I think we need an actual motion, right? Like motion to
Motion
form
to create the
ad
priority. Yeah.
I motion to
Okay.
create the ad hoc committee on the EA priorities poll with the charge and responsibilities outlined.
By unanimous consent?
By
No, we're not
unanimous
doing
consent.
unanimous. We have
Oh,
to
we're
do
doing a real
majority
vote. We're
vote.
doing a real vote.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, Yvonne has put forward the motion to create the ad hoc committee
I'll
for the EA
second.
priorities poll. Seconded. All those in favor, please use the green check mark. I'm just going to go right there and say it's a majority vote because, yeah, we're good. And Michelle votes yes as well. All right. So our ad hoc committee for the priority poll has been established. So again, any interest in being a part of this committee, or anything like that, please reach out to Yvonne.
Yes.
Trying
Awesome.
to
I'll be reaching
figure.
out to the chairs of the committees themselves also this week to gather some interest, and hopefully you are also able to think about members within your committee who can support us in this very important task.
Okay. Yes, Erica.
Question about the vote. There were
Yeah,
two
but
people who
no,
didn't vote.
it's by majority vote. We didn't need to have against, so there was majority of green check marks.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Yeah. Carl?
Just a question about timeline, because if the committee is not being established this like the formation of the committee is not being established right now, I have a little difficulty believing the December 1st timeline of getting a list of priorities sent to the executive committee is going to be possible. So I just want to, is that timeline flexible? Are we assuming that that timeline is flexible? Or are we holding strict to that timeline?
It's my understanding that it was a tentative timeline and that there is some flexibility. I will leave it to Yvonne to clarify that. But also, we have 23 minutes to get through the rest of our agenda unless someone motions to extend.
Oh, I mean, I'll just echo what you said, Wendy. Yes, it's a tentative timeline, right? Like something what we hope that the committee is able to accomplish, and at the same time, we'll understand that there's going to be changes, bumps in the road, and whatnot. So it's something that can be modified as needed. Absolutely.
All right. That said, we're going to move to our next item on the agenda. We have a special meeting request from Dean Love, who is the Dean of Students, for a listening session on the Student Code of Conduct and Procedures. The reason she asked for a special meeting is due to the time of the presentation. It's about an hour and 10 minutes, so it's actually about the length of one of our regular meetings. In my capacity as chair, I can call a special meeting and I will be calling a special meeting. I just want some input from you all as to if there's any preference on a date. She did ask for early spring, so I'm thinking sometime in January. I know some of us have responsibilities, ad drop or students returning or whatever it might be. I'm kind of looking at that second week in January, so I'm going to give it like a couple of minutes. People can raise their hands if they have a preference, if they're okay with whatever is decided, anything like that. But go ahead and raise your hand if you have any comments, questions, concerns. And again, just as for clarification, the Student Code of Conduct, it doesn't impact staff directly because it doesn't address staff issues or code of conduct. However, it does impact staff indirectly for those staff that do work and engage with students as part of their positions and their everyday work thing. Yes, Danielle.
I'd already mentioned the ad drop thing, but I also want to point out that the people most affected in student services who would most need to know these policies are the people that are going to be most busy at that point in time with ad drop.
Okay, and ad drop is the week before classes
The
start,
week
is that
before
correct?
classes start and then through the first week are the chaos time for those of us in student services. So if it's
All
that
right.
time, those of us, who really need to know this the most aren't going to be able to participate.
All right. So again, with winter break and everything, we only have one regularly scheduled meeting in January. It's January 21st. I don't want to do it the week that we return from winter break because that's when the president's address to staff is. So then the week of the 12th obviously is, that's the ADDRAP week. Any preference on days that may or may not work the week of January 26th to January 30th? Again, I know I'm not going to pick a day that's going to work for everybody, but if I can just get some input, that would be helpful. I want to be respectful of people's workloads and such. Yes, Rose.
I support making sure the people that would be the most affected have the opportunity to attend.
Okay, and that's why I'm asking, because I don't know who would be impacted or affected the most. So again, if anyone has a particular day, either that works or does not work the week of January 26th to the 30th, please either actually send me an email by the end of business today so that I can work with Dean Love's office and let her know the day of the meeting. And then there will be an announcement that will come out to everyone of the date of the special meeting. But again, like I said, I wanted to be respectful of people's times and schedules and such, but I also want to be respectful of her request to have this special meeting. So there will be a special meeting. We don't know the day. More info to come. And then the next item is, so I was at the University Assembly meeting last night. And you will also see in the faculty and staff news that was sent out this morning, there is a town hall for the Committee on the Future of American University. It's a staff town hall. It's being held next Monday, November 24th, from 10 to 11. You'll see in the faculty staff news, there is a link that you need to register here. I did actually indicate to the co-chairs last night that this was the first I had heard of it. And again, they're announcing it in the faculty staff news just only a few days before the actual town hall is happening. They acknowledge that they could do better with their communication and stuff with this. So I do strongly urge, if you're available and you can attend that town hall, please do. Register for it, share this information with your constituents and others. There was, so with our, yeah, a lot of people taking next week off. I'm actually one of them. I'm on vacation on Monday, but I have now three meetings on Monday. There was concern, and that was the point of our resolution that we just recently passed about staff involvement, not on any of these committees that have been formed recently. I am happy to announce it's kind of mitigated as part of their presentation last night. They did indicate that they're going to have advisory panels for certain constituent groups. So, and one of them will be a staff advisory panel. So again, if you're interested and you're available, whether it's you or a constituent that you may have that's interested, please by all means urge them to pay attention to this and have them sign up for this. I also have another announcement. It's not on the agenda. I do apologize for this. It literally just came via email. I have been told I can share this because there is not an official announcement coming out. Our Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer, Christine Lovely, is leaving Cornell. Her last day is on December 15th. She'll be starting a new position on December 18th at UCLA. This was a bit of a surprise. And it's been a pleasure working with her. I wish her the best, and we will be working in the meantime. Our liaison will now be interim Vice President Sean. It's in the article.
Mueller.
Mueller, yes. So he will take over as interim Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer. I don't want to go too far into detail about this. I just wanted to let all of you know Christine did say it was okay for me to share this information via this meeting. So there's that. Again, in the essence of time, we have committee reports to still get through and liaison reports. So I'm going to switch this over to Yvonne for executive committee. If we can kind of keep the comments in the chat to a dull roar, I would really appreciate that. We're going to start losing people. So let's do our committee reports and liaison reports. Thanks.
Awesome. From our from the executive committee, I mean, we really came up with the ad hoc committee, the draft, the charge, and all of that. We also had the opportunity to meet with Christine Lovely for our EA liaison meeting. And one of the things that came up was the inclement weather email that was sent out. There was a little bit of confusion around the workday agreement, particularly working from home. Since on the email, it does stipulate that the expectation is that if there's a closure of the campus, but you have a flexible work arrangement and work from home, that you are expected to complete your responsibilities from home. That should not impact the current work arrangement that you have. So for example, if you work from home on Tuesdays and the campus is closed on Monday, and now you have to work from home on Monday as well, you shouldn't have to then come in on Tuesday. And if that's something that you have concerns with or issues with, reach out to us and we can connect with our liaison as well to clarify further, because that's the communication that has been shared with us as of right now. There's also been some concerns about the staff salary bands increases for newer employees, and there might not have been an adjust to current employees. So that's something that we have passed down as information, as feedback. And I mean, of course, one of the things that they share is that it's not necessarily viable to raise everyone's salaries at the same time, particularly with the finances that we are going through. And the last thing that I'll share is with the EA priorities poll, that we do have someone from HR who's going to be working in that committee to support and guide the questions as well. And that is all from me for now.
Great. Thanks, Yvonne. Victoria, are you on for communications committee?
There we go. Can you see me and hear me?
Yes.
Yep, we can.
Okay. Hi. Sorry for being late. Great presentation. Communications committee was supposed to meet on Friday the 14th, but after a discussion with the subcommittee, we wanted to make sure that we aligned our possible last meeting for November with the George Peter nominations. And so we will be meeting this upcoming Monday at 2:30 p.m. and we're going to try to see if we can get everything done in the first 30 to 45 minutes of the meeting so we can all attend the town hall at 3 p.m. An EA voice will go out before winter break begins for sure, working on that and still looking to the future of the social media stuff that we had discussed briefly in the last meeting. Hasn't made much movement, I'm not going to lie, but slowly but surely we'll win the race. So we're kind of just pushing through to the end.
Great. Thanks, Victoria. Education and development, Deb.
Yes. Hello, everyone. So we met as a committee last week, continuing to review some tangible goals and things that we want to focus on this coming year. And I think we're making some headway. And I'll just share just quickly with those. There's like three top things that we're working on. That is making sure that staff are fully aware of the pros and the cons of using AI. And we have a member who's working closely with that AI team and making sure that the website and the resources are addressing those concerns. In addition, we're, as a follow-up to Kathy Berkren at our meeting last week, some questions came up about leading in a remote environment. So being a leader remotely and the importance of having training on how to do that effectively. Currently, there isn't something that exists. So we've reached out to Kathy to figure out if there's something available.